TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. How many reasons for an attack on Syria? An interview with Middle East analyst Jeffrey Blankfort, recorded on September 8, 2013, before the then-planned congressional votes on an attack on Syria. Jeff Blankfort is a journalist, photographer, and radio host of Takes on the World, a program on international affairs on public radio KZYX in Northern California. He is the former editor of the Middle East Labor Bulletin. Jeff is also my neighbor, and for me and his many friends, a reliable and responsible source of information on topics that many find too hot to handle. This recording reflects our sense of foreboding that the political theater, performed by then Secretary of State Colin Powell before the United Nations, on weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, would repeat itself 10-plus years later with Syria as the target. Here's Jeffrey Blankfort.
Colin Powell presented a lot of fabricated evidence to the UN. Even though it was fabricated, at least he presented it. What we see today is the United States declaring, without waiting to hear from the UN investigators on the ground, that the Assad government launched a chemical attack against its own people. Now, what's interesting is that in the congressional hearings, Kerry did not release to the members of Congress, even the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, did not give them anything more than a summary of the evidence. And when Representative Alan Grayson of Florida asked Defense Secretary Hagel to see the actual evidence, the conversations that were supposedly recorded of Syrian officials, first Defense Secretary Hagel said he didn't know what Representative Grayson was talking about. And then he still appeared to be confused. And then finally said to Grayson, well, that's classified. So here are members of Congress being asked to vote for a war, another war, without being given information, the evidence to make a choice. And this is one of the reasons I believe that the overwhelming number of members of Congress have committed to vote against going to war in the House when they vote after the Senate votes. And this is very important because we have been told by Obama, we've been told by Secretary of State Kerry, a Vietnam War veteran who threw away his medals in protest against the war, perhaps he should get them back, is that this is not like Iraq, because this time we do have the evidence which he says he has high confidence in, but he doesn't have high confidence in the members of the U.S. Congress to allow them to see that evidence. And the same evidence was presented, or lack of evidence, the same summary was presented to the British Parliament. And this is really our closest ally in the world, because in all our wars, Britain and the United States have been allies on the field. Israel is an ally in another way, talks about getting us into war, but they don't put battle soldiers on the field supporting American soldiers. As a matter of fact, in both Iraq wars, they've been asked not to participate. So in any case, here is Britain, our closest ally, who was told the same lies by Tony Blair, the Labour Prime Minister. And here is David Cameron, the Conservative Prime Minister. After talking about joining the United States, he goes to Parliament, which he really has to do because Parliament is a democratic institution in which the Prime Minister, unlike the President, actually has to go and argue his case. And what we found there was members of Parliament speaking up, saying we have not seen the evidence and we're not going to be fooled again. And they decided to vote against going to war. And Prime Minister Cameron accepted their decision. The mainstream media in the United States has played this down. But what it is the greatest foreign policy defeat for the United States, probably since Vietnam, and maybe even before that. I cannot remember any other situation in which the Americans have been so put down in the international community. NATO, which the U.S. has essentially run, NATO will not participate. France says it still might, but France is iffy. Syria is their old colony, and they're responsible for dividing Syria into Lebanon. But the overwhelming majority of the people of France and the French Parliament are against going to war. And particularly now, since it started out as being simply a limited engagement in which a number of cruise missiles, Tomahawk cruise missiles costing over $1 million apiece, would be fired into Syria, into Damascus, at various military targets. Since that time, we've heard that the war will be expanded, that in fact there'll be B-52 bombers and B-1 stealth bombers. So what we're talking about is a major act of war, unprovoked war, because Syria has not threatened or does not represent a threat to the United States, despite what the president has said. He does not really have the power to go to war unless there's imminent attack from Syria and there's no imminent attack on the agenda. What's really interesting is that on the 30th of August, a longtime National Public Radio correspondent, Dale Gavlak, and a Jordanian journalist, Yaha Abaneh, wrote an article in which they described their interviews with Syrians on the rebel side in the area that was supposedly targeted with sarin gas. And these rebels said that they had fired these weapons and had been given them by the Saudi Arabia, particularly Prince Bandar ibn Sultan, who is a longtime CIA asset going through several presidents. These weapons had been given to them and they didn't know what they were, but that it was not the Syrian regime, but the rebels themselves had fired these. Now, this story was written by a longtime Jordanian-based NPR correspondent and AP correspondent, and yet we did not hear it on NPR, and we did not see it in the newspapers. And what the writers say, the U.S. and others are not interested in examining any contrary evidence, with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry saying Monday that Assad's guilt was, quote, a judgment already clear to the world. Now, the world has not seen the evidence. This is another game of smoke and mirrors. More than that, he has announced that the casualties were 1,429 Syrians dead, 426 of whom were children. What's interesting about those statistics, which have no source, Doctors Without Borders said there were 355, and they were there. There are no American investigators on the ground, and no UN investigators counting bodies. There's no basis for these numbers, and these numbers have now been accepted by the mainstream media as if they were fact. So what we're seeing again is the American people being taken for a ride, but this time, and for the first time, the American people may stop the war. All the polls show, and all the members of Congress who've been interviewed indicate, that their polling and their phone calls and the letters to their office are running overwhelmingly, 80-90%, against the war. And they are now being challenged by the Israel lobby. Not because the Israel lobby has concern for the Syrians, but the Israel lobby has a concern that if President Obama backs off and doesn't have a red line and follow it with Syria, that the message will be sent to Iran that it can go ahead with this program that the Israelis and the Americans say they're determined to produce nuclear weapons, although there's no evidence, outside evidence, provided by UN inspectors that this is happening. So what we are really seeing is a vote not for just an attack on Syria, but for a potential attack on Syria and Iran. And one of the messages from one of the Israeli lobbyists is that if the United States does not attack Syria, this means that the chances are improved that Israel will attack Iran on its own, with weapons provided by the U.S. taxpayers, of course. Since the invasion of Iraq, the entire Israel lobby is focused on Iran. They accuse Iran of trying to get nuclear weapons, while the fact that Israel is the only country in the Middle East with nuclear weapons is never discussed, never mentioned in the media, and even American presidents are unable to mention, even when directly asked about it. So Iran has a peaceful nuclear program that is legitimate, that is legal under international law. They have broken no laws. Yet the United States continue to sanction Iran. They have really crippled the Iranian economy. And in any other situation, this would be a casus belli. In fact, the United States is at war with Iran economically. And economics have been the reasons for other wars before, and there's no sanctions quite like the sanctions against Iran. They're draconian, and they're still planning more, finding more things to sanction. So Iran is not Iraq. And they had a long war with Iraq. In that, it should be important to mention that in that war with Iraq, the United States sided with Iraq, and not only provided the chemicals that the Iraqi scientists used to make chemical weapons, they looked the other way. This is the Ronald Reagan administration. Looked the other way because Saddam was our ally. He not only gassed and murdered over 100,000 Kurds, he also used it against Iranian soldiers. And I remember the journalist Robert Fisk describing how he walked through a train car with Iranian soldiers who had been gassed, and the car reeked of gas. He was almost sick himself, and he was there. So this is, America talks about the use of chemical weapons being this the worst thing in the world. Of course, not mentioning that the U.S. used chemical weapons extensively in Vietnam, both white phosphorus, napalm, certainly being burned by napalm. You have your body incinerated. And the same thing with white phosphorus, which you cannot put out. It burns right down to the bone. It certainly is as horrible as sarin gas and probably worse. And then, of course, there's Agent Orange, the defoliant which we use to clear the jungles and also which killed many of our own soldiers and left lingering problems with Vietnam to this day. And then, of course, in Fallujah, we had white phosphorus again and depleted uranium. And the American people have not seen the pictures of the babies being born in Fallujah with deformed heads and cancers and all kinds of diseases from U.S. use of chemical weapon. Also, Israel used white phosphorus in its war in 1982 in Lebanon. It used it in Gaza. And people were able to watch it at that point in Al Jazeera. And this white phosphorus is a chemical weapon. So when John Kerry, who makes Condoleezza Rice look good, when he speaks in this high, haughty tone about America's responsibility and calls his use of gas a moral obscenity, he should look in the mirror and see what it is. He's a moral obscenity. It's extraordinary how this country has become addicted to war. And now we've seen there's only one institution, one sector of American society that is for this war. And that is Israel lobby, because they are concerned about the United States not being tough enough to attack Iran. And I think Americans are conscious of this. This is out there in public like never before. It's a critical moment because in the long run, I would suspect that the majority of American Jews are not for a war. But here is a Jewish establishment which is dedicating itself, and not just AIPAC. Anti-Defamation League, the American Jewish Committee, they're all calling members of Congress to support the war. And the religious side, 17 rabbis representing the entire spectrum of Judaism, are invoking the Holocaust to get the members of Congress to vote for war. If we go to war, their Congress now decides, after their pressure, to change their votes, and we go to war, the American public will know who to blame. Now, I should say, Bashar Assad was a dictator. His father before him was a dictator. There is no such a thing as democracy in Syria. It wasn't the worst dictatorship in the world. It didn't allow for public discussion, of political discussion. But people weren't being rounded up on the streets. People just were able to live their lives. This is why a great percentage of the Syrian people are still with the government, particularly those in minorities, because they have seen what the jihadists funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar have done in the country. I mean, they've not committed atrocities, they video them to show off what they're doing. And so then finally, Hezbollah, a Syrian political party and also resistance group, which emerged in resistance to the Israeli invasion and occupation in 1982, which is forgotten, which is not mentioned. That invasion, unprovoked, killed 18,000 Palestinian and Lebanese civilians in a matter of a few weeks when that war started. Hezbollah came in to fight on the side of the Syrian government, which is its ally, against the foreign jihadists. But that was not considered okay by the West. While they didn't support the al-Qaeda elements in there, they didn't say they should be thrown out. Obviously, they can't be thrown out because they are the leading fighters against the government. And they have been armed by the Saudis and Qatar, and also by Libyan jihadists who were involved in the overthrow of Gaddafi. And those weapons that were in Libya have found their way into Syria. And this is not a secret. For Israel, Syria is not the problem, other than their support for Hezbollah. Hezbollah, after 18 years, forced the Israelis to leave Lebanon and end their occupation because they were taking too many casualties, the Israeli government was. And then in 2006, they had a 34-day war in which the Hezbollah fighters, without an air force, were able to stop the vaunted Israeli military on the ground. This humiliation by Hezbollah is something that the Israelis have to overcome. And this is one of the reasons that they want to break up what they call the Iranian-Syrian Hezbollah axis, they call that, because Syria is the middle man between Iran supporting Hezbollah, which it does. I mean, but the idea that Hezbollah is a Iranian proxy is not borne out by reality. These are Lebanese people who come from the land, who love their country, and fought against an outside occupying power with very little support from anyone in the West. They defeated that occupying power.
Who else is there to mention who is opposed to U.S. intervention?
The European countries at the G20 that Obama met with, he came away saying, well, they mostly support what we're doing. Well, one country that did support the United States, Australia, their prime minister just lost the election. And so what Australia will do, we don't know, but that was the last position he took, was supporting the United States, and he just lost the election. So he's going to be replaced. His replacement, who's more to the right, and right and left don't mean anything in this situation, because we have, ironically, an alliance between anti-war Democrats and Tea Party people in this country to stop this war. I mean, Michelle Bachmann, who was one of those who signed a letter to Obama. Of course, we could say many of the Tea Party people hate Obama for the wrong reasons, because they're, let's say, racist. But the reality is that they're isolationists. And frankly, isolationism militarily on the part of the United States is something to be supported. Whatever we've done militarily around the world, we walk away with blood on our hands and pay no price for it. And the politicians who sent us there have paid no price for it.
How about Canada?
Canada is, they're one of those who support the United States, but they're not ready to commit forces with the United States. So they say, you go ahead and do it. But, you know, the BRICS countries, Brazil, you know, Russia, India, China, are totally against it. They have not been able to come up with a coalition. John Kerry, Secretary of State Kerry, was trying to fudge this like everything else. But when asked these questions by members of Congress to give the names of the countries who were supporting the United States, Kerry couldn't do it. He started fumbling around.
Where are the Saudis?
He does mention the Saudis. Of course the Saudis. They have been funding the opposition from the very beginning. I should say that Robert Fisk reported, confirming information from friends in Beirut, that at the very beginning of the Syrian uprising, almost the very beginning, before we got reports of it, Al Jazeera, which is owned by the government of Qatar, and funding the opposition, funding their own fighters, had footage of fighters, foreign fighters, in Syria, but they never ran it. And as soon as the Syrian uprising or protest began, legitimate nonviolent protest, the price of Kalashnikovs, AK-47s, in Beirut went up to $2,000 a pop. And Sunnis in Lebanon started going into Syria to fight the Assad government.
Let's move over to the constitutional question, War Powers Act.
Before the War Powers Act, which was passed in 1973, American presidents had sent on their own, without approval of Congress, American troops on a foreign soil about 250 times since we became a country. No other country matched that number. But the American people have been so lied to, and Congress has been so lied to over the war in Vietnam, that they passed the War Powers Act when Nixon was president to stop that from happening again. Well, it actually hasn't stopped from happening again. The Republicans, as I said, for racist reasons, are very much opposed to Obama going into Libya. And he went into Libya saying it was not a war. This is from a letter. If the use of 221 Tomahawk cruise missiles, 704 Joint Direct Attack munitions, and 42 Predator Hellfire missiles expended in Libya does not constitute hostilities, what does? Also, this debate is taking place when the U.S. is running out of money. Suddenly, if the government doesn't get funded, we heard before all this happened, it was going to shut down. We don't hear anything about this, but we evidently do have the money. We now have 5 destroyers in the Mediterranean, but we're spending millions of dollars right now in a war that hasn't even started yet.
We listened to Professor Francis Boyle a couple of days ago, and he was talking impeachment.
Francis Boyle is an international lawyer who wrote the impeachment papers Henry Gonzalez introduced to try and to get first George Bush, President George Herbert Walker Bush, impeached. And he has prepared impeachment papers for President Obama, which is certainly justified given his record on foreign policy since he became the president. And all he needs is one member of Congress to call for the impeachment proceedings. Now, it's probably more likely that they'll be Republican. But at this time, this is the most crucial issue facing the American public. And if it brings people together to stop the war, it will be a major milestone in American history, because we have not stopped the war before. We had huge protests before George Bush's war, but the Congress went along with it. But right now, the American public is tired of the war. The internet has helped to inform people, even when the mainstream media doesn't. We cannot afford financially to borrow another $1 trillion from China.
Our children.
Yeah, to our children. And the irony is that the United States, as Robert Fisk said, we go in there, we're acting as Al-Qaeda's air force. And ironically, with September 11th coming, and whatever one thinks about who is responsible, there was Al-Qaeda involvement, the idea that, 12 years later, we are doing, I mean, we say we're not doing that. We, the government, U.S. government says we're not doing that. But bombing and degrading, a wonderful term, degrading military forces, obviously helps the opposition, which is led at this point by al-Nusra Front and al-Qaeda of Iraq. And, actually, the bombing, should it take place, is going to spread this war all over the region. It's almost like being on the eve of, World War I. America is isolated in the world in a way it has never been isolated before. And President Obama, the Nobel Prize winner, bears a large responsibility for that. When Obama made a statement on August 31st, in which he announced that he is going to have Congress vote on it, but even he will not admit that he's obliged to do so under the War Powers Act. He wrote a statement, "Yet, while I believe I have the authority to carry out this military action without specific congressional authorization, I know that the country will be stronger if we take this course and our actions will be more, even more effective." British Parliament taking that vote, and then Cameron saying, "I will bow to the will of the Parliament," again, is what pushed Obama to show that at least in the United States, we can be as democratic as Britain. I believe had the British not done that, or if the British Parliament had voted to go to war, we might already have been at war. So we can thank the Brits, and we can thank David Cameron for acknowledging that the people's representative in England had spoken. Now, if the American president can recognize that, we'll all be very lucky and the world will be better off.
That was an interview with journalist and Middle East analyst Jeffrey Blankford. You can find his bi-weekly radio show on international affairs, Takes on the World, archived on the website of radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. You can download this program for free from TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly radio podcasts. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.